This is Digital Story Podcast number 685, April 30th, 2019. Today's theme is weighing in on the Panasonic S1. I'm Derek Story. For experienced mirrorless photographers, the Panasonic S1 might feel like a beast of a camera. With the standard 24-105mm zoom lens attached, it is every bit as hefty as a Canon 5D with comparable zoom. In fact, it's about 3.75 pounds. That being said, this camera packs a lot of technology in that body, and that's what I'm going to take a closer look at on today's TDS Photography Podcast. So for my field test, I traveled east to the picturesque town of Calistoga. It's a nice little place. You can walk up and down the main street there. There are many things to photograph. And I got there in the morning when the light was somewhat flat. So I was able to photograph under those conditions. And then I knew the sun was going to break through that day. So then when the sun broke through, I was able to shoot in brighter, more contrasty conditions. And all I had with me was the Panasonic S1 and one battery. And I have been trying to work just with the basic setup. In other words, I go with one battery. I go with one memory card because I don't, I only have SD memory cards, not the newfangled memory cards that are in the second slot. And I set everything on program mode, auto white balance, auto ISO, you know, all the default settings so I could see what the camera really did on its own. And then I shot RAW plus JPEG so I could compare those RAW files to the JPEGs. Now, I did all of my viewing for this camera, all the image viewing, in Capture One Pro 12.3, I believe, the latest version. And that was really nice because it can decode RAW files for both the Panasonic S1 and the Olympus OMD EM1X. So I had RAW files and JPEGs from both of those cameras in Capture One Pro 12. So it was very convenient for comparing not only the two cameras, but the JPEGs to RAW. And I'm a huge fan of the RAW processing in Capture One Pro. So I felt like that I was giving the S1, you know, every advantage in terms of looking at its RAW files. And I can tell you right now, it's not a spoiler alert, that those files, both the JPEGs and the RAWs, looked great. I'll talk more about that here in a few minutes. All right, so that was the setup for my basic test shoot. I've done other stuff as well, some low light shooting, you know, some puttering around the studio, all that. Because the camera does have this heft, you know, these over 3 pounds of heft, and it is, you know, large in the hands, I really wanted to take it out in the field and just shoot with it for an entire morning just to see how it felt compared to the other cameras that I've been shooting with in recent history. So that field test, in addition to the stuff that I did around the studio, was very important to me, and I'm really glad I did it, and I had a lot of fun. I did enjoy the camera, and I did enjoy the shoot, and I came away with some pictures. Hey, you know, what's not to like, correct? All right, so before we get more into that, let's just take a look at the highlight features for this $3,400 camera and lens combo. So the headliner, of course, is that 24.2 megapixel full frame sensor, and it is a beauty. I mean, it really is a good sensor. Panasonic has done a great job, you know, with this camera in that sense that if you're looking for a full-frame mirrorless camera that delivers the goods, then this camera indeed does deliver the goods. That sensor is a good one. And they use the Venus engine for the image processor. By the way, the processing of images, the camera response, the focusing, all that stuff, that was quite good. It was quite good. It's a very responsive camera. Now it has a 5.76 million dot with a 0.78 magnification electronic viewfinder. and it has a 3.2-inch, 2.1-million-dot tilt touchscreen. One of the first things that you'll notice if you get to hold this camera, fire it up, and just, you know, look at it, is that both the touchscreen, the back LCD, and when you look through the electronic viewfinder, it is gorgeous. Now, to this day, when I think of Panasonic, I still think of television sets in addition to everything else they do. I just have always felt like they're really good at things on a screen. And this camera, boy, talk about looking good on a screen. That back LCD in particular, and the electronic viewfinder, but that back LCD is just gorgeous. Now, it's interesting that they went with the tilting LCD as opposed to the fully articulated one that swings out. So a lot of photographers I know like the tilting LCD better than the one that swings out. They just feel like it's more manageable. And unless they're big into video, it does everything that they need them to do, which is mainly holding the camera up over your head and focusing, and then having the camera down low and focusing, and a tilt LCD handles both of those quite well. The interesting thing about it for me in the field, however, was that a tilt LCD doesn't have a protection cover. In other words, the ones that are fully articulated, you know, you swing them around and then you fold them in, and then the back of the LCD is what's rubbing against your shirt, or more importantly, your shirt buttons if you have the camera around your neck. And for the first time in a long time, I had to use the neck strap with this camera instead of a wrist strap because it's so heavy. And I started out working with a wrist strap, and I'm going, no, I'm not going to make a 4-hour shoot with this. So I did have to break out the neck strap that came with it, which, by the way, is quite nice. But then when I'm using a neck strap, I'm always worried about buttons and zippers and stuff on the front of my shirt rubbing against that LCD and scratching it, especially with a camera that I don't own and that I'm borrowing, which is, of course, you know, the case with this camera. That being said, I kind of missed the fully articulated LCD that would fold back in. However, the shooting experience with the tilt LCD is quite good. Regardless of which style you want or like or prefer, the screen itself is just beautiful, absolutely beautiful. Now, it shoots a 4K video. I didn't test any of the video. I wasn't really thinking video with this camera. I was thinking more still photography. If I have time, in the time that I have the camera, I might do some video testing. But however, some of the reports that I read on the 4K video recording is that it's possibly the new low light king when it comes to video recording. The reviews I read on the video recording were quite good. No surprise there, right? Panasonic has been making great video capture cameras for a long time. This one seems to be right there with it. ISO, it goes down to a very nice 100 and up to a 51,200. And the images are good at 51,200. They are good indeed. So again, if you're thinking low light, this is one of those cameras up against the top of the line Sony mirrorless that you will probably want to be thinking about if that's the kind of shooting that you're engaged in often. Up to 9 frames per second burst mode when shooting with this camera. Contrast detect, 225 area AF system. The focusing is good with this camera. You know, the way that it comes out of the box, at least the one that came out of the box for me, was that it was set up for a back button focus. There's an AF button on the back. Believe it or not, I most of the time do a half press on the shutter button for my focusing, continue to hold the half press, and then, you know, reframe unless I'm using one of the focusing patterns of the camera. So I had to get, and I decided, I looked through the book a bit, and then I just decided, no, I'm just going to go with the back button focus on this, which I thought worked reasonably well. So my hesitation with the focus on the camera isn't its ability to focus quickly and accurately. It was more just sort of getting used to the ergonomics of the focusing system itself. It has sensor shift image stabilization, which is quite good and my favorite. I just love sensor-based image stabilization. Weather-sealed construction, which is really nice. That was one of the things that I appreciated about this camera, is just sort of felt like you can take it out anywhere and shoot with it. And it does feel solid. In other words, a very solid feeling camera. It's weather sealed. And the lens that I was using is what's pretty much the standard one now, which is the Lumic S 24-105 f4 macro OIS lens. It's hefty, but at the same time, it's quite capable. It's handsome. It's got nice big glass on the front. The design is good. It's smooth in operation. And it's sharp. It's a very sharp lens. It is a worthy lens to go with this camera body. Okay, so that sort of the highlights, at least the highlights that jumped out at me with this guy. Let's start our deeper discussion with the sensor itself. So I think it's every bit as good as the top mirrorless Sony sensors. I was looking at images in Capture One Pro on an iMac screen, on a modern iMac screen, at 400%. And I will say that in good light, the images are outstanding. And then as you raise the ISO up, they are just plain old great. I mean, they are good. It has wonderful dynamic range. This camera delivers great dynamic range. And the colors are quite good. And I think the colors also, I want to give a shout out to Panasonic on the JPEGs, because, you know, when you're shooting RAW plus JPEG and you get to look at those pairs, especially when the RAW files are processed by Capture One Pro, who usually renders a very nice RAW file. It's not the old dull RAW file that we used to see back in the old days. And then we had to do a lot of work to it in order to, you know, make the image look great. Generally speaking, the RAW files from Capture One Pro look very good. That was particularly true with the Olympus OMD EM1X. Those RAW files right away were fantastic looking. And the RAW files here were good, not quite as beautiful rendered in Capture One Pro, but the JPEGs were very beautiful. They're very colorful and contrasty, but not too contrasty, you know, all those kind of things that you like. So when you're looking at the RAW plus JPEG pairs for the S1, the JPEGs will really jump out at you. And one of the things that I was thinking about is that you could shoot just JPEG with this camera and probably do quite well in most lighting conditions. So I didn't find myself having to do a lot of adjustment to the JPEGs, you know, especially in terms of tonal adjustment. Now, the RAW files, on the other hand, even though they started out a bit duller than the JPEGs, which is absolutely fine, they're RAW files, right? They did respond well to shadow and highlight adjustments. They did respond well to, you know, adding any sort of a sharpness to them. So they were very, what I call, responsive RAW files, you know, which I like a lot. I like RAW files that, you know, respond to my highlight and shadow adjustments in particular the way that I think they should. So the Panasonic files are, you know, they're wonderful. And I think that, you know, 24 megapixels, at least for me, is plenty, is absolutely plenty. There's more than enough resolution. You're, 6,000 pixels on the long side. You know, that's a lot of stuff, especially when they're very high quality pixels, as these are. So indeed, it does deliver on the thing that we're probably, you know, most concerned about, which is how is that imaging pipeline in the Panasonic S1? It is good. It is very good. And I think lives up to the promise of a full frame camera. Absolutely, yes. Now, you know, moving on to the shooting experience with the camera, especially as the morning wore on, I did notice a difference with it. It's just bigger. I felt like more people were looking at me while I was shooting. I felt more obvious, you know, with this kind of this hulk of a camera. I was surprised that other people carrying cameras that no one asked me about it. You know, I was kind of expecting to have some of the, hey, is that the new Panasonic full frame or, you know, something like that? Or, you know, what the heck is it or anything like that? And I didn't get any questions, but I did have people kind of, you know, eyeballing me as I was shooting. Obviously much more than if I was shooting with like the Ricoh GR3 or even, you know, my smaller mirrorless cameras, you know, my Olympus or my Fujifilm camera. So that part, and I don't think it was just me either. I don't think it was just me being self-conscious because I'm not used to, you know, carrying those around, those bigger cameras. I definitely noticed folks just noticing me more. Now, did I have any bad encounters? No, I did not. I didn't feel like I was under the radar the way that I normally do, which is saying something for, you know, someone of my height, right? You know, you're probably thinking, how do you think you're ever under the radar? Well, I guess people forget about, you know, they say, oh, this big tall guy, and maybe they don't even see the little camera. maybe that's what's going on there. So in terms of other aspects of the shooting experience, in terms of just like figuring out how to navigate the menus, I thought the menus were quite good. The physical buttons on the camera were quite good. The command dials were good. Part of me kind of wish it had a joystick. It doesn't. It has a, you know, an OK button in the middle with a kind of a jog dial. And I sort of would have liked to have a joystick to move the AF points around when I was playing with that. But generally speaking, I thought the shooting experience in terms of just figuring out how to use the camera without spending a lot of time with my nose buried in the owner's manual, I thought it was a fairly intuitive camera. So, you know, I'll give it definitely good marks on that. Now, when I compare the RAW files from this camera to the RAW files from the Olympus EM1X, I thought it was quite interesting exercise. I mentioned earlier that I thought Capture One decoded the RAW files from the Olympus a bit prettier than they do from the Panasonic. And then what I would do is I would zoom in 400% on that IMAX screen and just look at the detail, look at the color, look at the, you know, the gradation of tone, you know, all that kind of stuff. Now, you're not going to be surprised to hear that the RAW files from the S1 looked, you know, quite good, even at 400%, which is really something when you think about it. I mean, 400%, and these images are holding together. I think that's phenomenal. I really do. And the JPEGs weren't holding together quite as well at 400% as you would expect, but they were reasonable. I mean, they were actually reasonable. And, you know, no one really looks at a shot at 400% unless they're doing something specific or, you know, they're getting ready to write a review. So I thought that was a pretty impressive performance. When I was just sort of hanging around at 200%, which I think is impressive, you know, being able to zoom in at 200%, have the image look like an image and not something else. Again, very, very good stuff. Now, compared to the RAW files of the EM1X, in good light, at reasonable ISOs, the EM1X did every bit as well as the Panasonic. The only thing that I noticed different, and this is going to be the actual size of the sensor, not the performance of it so much, is that you got more of a depth of field fall off with the Panasonic S1 than with the EM1X. And, you know, that's to be expected. That's just a straight physics sort of thing. There's no way to get around that with, well, I guess there is a way to get around it, but, you know, why would you want to with computational or anything like that? But in terms of, you know, just how the image looked at 200% or 400% in good light, The EM1X really did hold its own. Where you start to see a difference, of course, is when the ISO numbers start to go up, and especially when you're pushing, the Panasonic all the way up to 51,000 and that image is still looking good, then you're going, okay, all right, I'll give you that. So I would say that one of the ways that this camera, maybe separates itself from Micro Four Thirds cameras is when you get into that, super low light situation, and that it's easier to have that softer depth of field. Now, I have lenses on my Micro Four Thirds camera that do a great job of softening the background. That hasn't really been a problem for me. Most notably, the 75mm f1.8 Olympus lens, just amazing design on that lens that drops out that background beautifully. But I would say that you probably have to work a bit harder to do it with the Micro Four Thirds than you would with this S1. The S1, I just had the standard zoom lens F4. Now, I was shooting at F4 almost the whole time. Just shooting at F4, it was fantastic. It just really gave me what I focused on was sharp, and then, before it and after it, trailed off beautifully. So depth of field fall off and high ISO performance, probably 2-stop difference between the cameras there, right around there. So now we get to the big question, which is, of course, is this camera, the Panasonic S1, for you? And that's a great question. My answer is that if you've been jonesing for a full-frame mirrorless camera, I think you have to consider this Panasonic S1 as a contender, especially if you have no allegiance to other full-frame lenses or cameras. But if you're coming to this conversation clean, then you've got to consider the S1. Because in terms of image quality, I think it's just right there with the Sony, right there with the Nikon, the Canon, all of those. I mean, it is a full-fledged member of this elite group. Great sensor, excellent features, top-notch pictures. I mean, this camera really does deliver on the full-frame promise. Plus, when you look at lenses, they've done a great job of giving a reasonable fast start to the lens catalog. You've got the three lenses from Panasonic. You've got those 11 new optics. I think it's 11 from Sigma that they've announced. And they're nice lenses, and they're reasonably priced for full-frame lenses. So, I mean, there you go. You got those. And then you have some Leica glass as well available. So you have a nice array of optics to choose from right now. It's not like, you're starting out with a brand new camera, brand new full-frame camera, and waiting for the lens roadmap to fill out. No, you've got stuff to work with right now. So again, I think what they've done, forming this alliance with Sigma and Leica, was very smart, and it allowed people to make a jump right now and not wait until the lens catalog builds out. All of that being said, that if you don't need a full frame camera, if it just, again, the easy depth of field fall off and the low light performance, then personally I would choose a lighter, more nimble camera for my mirrorless entry, and especially if the bulk of my shooting was going to be in reasonable lighting. And what I mean by that is lighting where I don't very often have to go past ISO 3200, every now and then to 6400, that kind of thing. So in that case, then I would look at, the other lighter mirrorless options, because carrying the Panasonic S1 around for a full morning was a much different experience than carrying around the cameras that I normally do, the Olympus mirrorless and the Fuji. So that's my thoughts there. So it really comes down to, do you need that full frame sensor? Are you willing to have the extra weight? And a little bit of extra cost, those lenses cost a bit more. If you do, and if you're ready for that, then I would indeed recommend the Panasonic S1. It is a terrific camera that yields beautiful, beautiful pictures. Facebook, Instagram sue company that made over 9 million selling fake likes and followers. And I have a little tagline on this story. This story is from DP Review. They reported the story, among others. But my tagline on this is, this falls into the category that money can buy you love, or at least it could. So let me read you what they have to say here. Despite Instagram's terms of use saying purchasing likes, followers, and general activity isn't permitted, there's no shortage of services available that will do just that. Instagram has long tried to shut these services down, but now the issue is going to be challenged in court for one particular New Zealand-based company. Facebook has announced in a post on its newsroom website that it and Instagram have filed a lawsuit in United States federal court against the company and three individuals located in New Zealand. According to the complaint, the defendants use various websites and corporations to sell fake engagement services to Instagram users. The lawsuit specifically seeks to stop defendants from engaging and profiting in the sale of fake likes, views, and followers on Instagram, violating our terms of use and community guidelines, and violating the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act and other California laws for distributing fake likes on Instagram, even after their access was revoked and their accounts were suspended. So I think we're going to see more of this. Facebook, Instagram, just tired of this whole thing. We're tired of it. At least I'm tired of it. I can't speak for you, but I'm tired of it. You know, you see these accounts, you see these big numbers, and you're just looking at it, and you're going, really? How did this happen? Well, we have a pretty good guess on how that happened. And then at the same time, if someone does have a lot of followers and a lot of likes, you know, we want to have trust in that. We want to have trust that that has integrity, and we shouldn't, you know, be, you know, looking at that and going, did they buy those, or are they real? Well, if they're real, then that's not fair to that person either. So this whole thing needs to be cleaned up, and this seems like a good first step toward doing that. I have an update on the Nimble Photographer podcast. A new episode will drop on Thursday. So this will be our third episode. Quite excited about it. This time I'm talking with musician Alan Howarth. He's worked on scores for big-time Hollywood hits such as Halloween. He's a serious musician with serious connections, been in the business for a while, and had to reinvent himself over and over again. I think you'll be really interested to hear the parallels between a musician's journey compared to that of a photographer or a writer. And Alan does a great job of talking about, you know, that journey and the adjustments along the way. And remember, the thing about the Nimble Photographer podcast, if you missed its debut last week, this is about learning insights from working artists who have managed to survive in this competitive environment. What I want to do is, I'm not asking, you know, people, you know, all the general questions you usually hear in an interview. I'm really trying to get to, you know, what did you think you were going to do, and how did you get to where you're doing what you're doing now? And, you know, what are the things you had to do along the way to make that happen? You know, that kind of thing. And I think it's just absolutely fascinating. These interviews, after I'm done with the interview, I am excited because, you know, they're so interesting to me. So anyway, the next one drops on Thursday. I hope you tune into the Nimble Photographer podcast. You can get to it from the Digital Story. You can subscribe to it on Apple Music, on Google Play Podcasts, on Stitcher, you know, all the places that you normally consume podcasts. I think you really like what Alan has to say, and I hope you give it a listen. I want to give a big shout out to our Inner Circle members. We've had some new members join us recently, so welcome aboard. Just really happy to see when a new face shows up on the Inner Circle. And again, you know, I just was talking about the Nimble Photographer podcast and how, you know, the Inner Circle had much to do with helping me, you know, launch that new project. I have other new projects that I want to do as well. Projects that would come to you. There's no charge for Digital Story, no charge for Nimble Photographer, all that kind of stuff. I do them because I think they're important and because I want to do them. And the support of the Inner Circle helps me do them. And so I thank all of our members. If you're interested and becoming an Inner Circle member, hanging out with that group of folks, supporting these projects, then all you have to do is click on the tile, the Patreon tile that's on every page of the Digital Story, and you can check it out and see what's going on there. And finally, a big thanks to our friends at Red River Paper, the people who stand behind this show month in and month out, the people who make some of the best printing paper on the planet, and the people who support the printing community. And, you know, this is a big deal, supporting the printing community by not only providing a good product, as they do, but also by providing interesting information, by, you know, helping you. If you decide that you want to get into fine art greeting cards, you can go to Red River Paper, you can go to their site, and you can see tutorials, you can see suggestions for the type of paper to use, you can see all sorts of tips on how to create, you know, the best product possible. You can get the glassine sleeves and the envelopes to finish it off. That's the kind of full-bodied thing that I'm talking about that they do. It's not just that they want to sell you boxes of paper. Of course they want to do that. They're a company. That's, you know, that's their product. But the way that they approach it, you know, by providing you with reviews, by providing you with education, by providing you with suggestions on how to best achieve your goals, your printing goals, that's what I think really makes them special. They have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. I encourage you to go over there, take a look at our landing page, and then delve into their site and you know, get to know what's going on over there a bit, especially if you have any questions. And then remember, they have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. Wow, that Panasonic S1, it is really something. I hope you get a chance to hold one. I hope you get a chance to take some pictures with it. Again, if you're considering a full-frame mirrorless, you've got to look at that camera. I hope you enjoyed my discussion on it. I've got more good stuff in the pipeline for next week. Come back and join me then. Until then, have a great week. Bye-bye now.